Sylvia and me.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, I'm Laura Farenthold. I'm the author of The Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles, a mom and a journalist, and I'm happy to be here today with Sylvia and Me.
Laura, thank you so much for being here today. Your book, The Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles. One, you were married to an award-winning investigative journalist, Mark Pittman. And in fact, he had predicted the subprime crisis and was actually in the midst of suing the feds to find out what was going on with bailout money. You suffered a very, an awful tragedy. You lost him at a very young age. Mm. Can we go back and talk about Mark a little? Tell me who he was.
Well, that would take a long time, but...
How about the highlights? When did you meet him? How did you meet him?
He is a Kansas born and bred, solid citizen Midwesterner. And I grew up in upstate New York, and we're both journalists. So I went to work. I'd been at the New York Daily News, and I left there to go live in a cabin on a lake and work at a small newspaper. I was just burned out. And there he was in the newsroom. So we met at work, and we hit it off immediately. Moved in together within like a week.
That's great.
Yeah. But then, I kept saying, you have a lot going on. You really need to step this up a little bit, Pittman. So I got him to move within like a year and a half back to the city. And he started working at Bloomberg, worked his way up there, and then became, basically like the writer of the shot heard around the world with his reporting on the Federal Reserve and the subprime mortgage crisis and his, very, very, very intelligent man. His, if you will, prediction that nobody would really listen to. He had to sue the Federal Reserve because they wouldn't open their bailout books. Like, there's supposed to be transparency in government, right? So journalists filed something called a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act, and they just said, and they wouldn't give him the information because he, according to him, I'm talking too much, he come home like Henny Penny, like, the world is gonna crash. And I'm like, lighten up, you're fine, it's fine. But so he had this feeling like that the Federal Reserve was taking money from taxpayers and that the economy was gonna collapse and banks were gonna go bankrupt. And the feds had earmarked this money to bail the banks out. Okay. You remember this is like in 2008 and 2009?
Yeah. But sadly, in 2009, I believe you were having, it was Thanksgiving Eve, and you were having dinner out or drinks out with friends, and Mark called you.
Yeah.
And one of the worst things that anyone could think of happening happened, and he passed away.
He did. Yep.
And somehow, 8 months later, you decided to take your two girls who are 8 and 10, Nell and Samantha?
Susanna.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Nell and Susanna.
You haven't met them yet. If you did, you'd never forget their names.
Well, the thing is, I barely remember my own children.
I know, right?
But you decided that you needed to get away. Everyone deals with grief differently. And you did something that not a lot of people would do. You took your two young girls and you went on a trip. Can you tell us how that began? What really led you to say, I need to get out, I'm taking them, and you started on a road trip that you continued on for every one of their school vacations and summer? How did that begin?
You know, we were traumatized. It was really bad. Sorry, it's been 10 years and I still sometimes get a little...
Look, everyone deals with it. It's not a question that, oh, it happened 10 years ago. Get out. Are you kidding me? So,
I mean, sometimes you can talk about it and you're totally fine. And now I have weepy eye. But you know, it was traumatizing to have your husband have a heart attack and you're like trying to save him. And it was just horrible. And my kids saw it and we were just like, ugh. So, and the bad thing is he died before he won the Supreme Court ruling in his favor. Oh. And then the feds had to open the books. And Mark was right. So I get to say to him, right, you know, once in your life, okay. So we were just, you know, shell-shocked. So I wanted to get them out into fresh air, sunshine, like have them do things that would like be as big as their dad's death, like climb a mountain. You know, to like kind of build them up so that they could go through their lives and be like, well, you know what? I climbed, you know, whatever mountain, so this isn't as bad. Or like to have that feeling of power or independence. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I have enough trouble myself.
Yeah, like strength, to have that inner strength and that perseverance. So, and my mom was like, you're out of your mind. You cannot take those girls on a camping trip out west, which of course made me want to do it more. Yeah, because like it brings out that rebellious teenager and you're like, really? I can do it. So I took them camping out west. So we landed in Portland, Oregon. And it was really fun, but really hard to like have to pitch the tent, unpitch the tent, get the food, cook the food over a campfire. You know, it's hard work camping.
Well, yeah. That's something I do. I'm not a very big outdoorsy camping person.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, I didn't have trouble when my kids were camping.
I mean, it's one thing, you know, if you have stuff that you're bringing from home, you're loading your car, you're packing the dog and the kids and the coolers, that's totally different. When you get on an airplane and you fly and then you have to rent gear, like it was minimalistic, we'll put it that way. And I was like, you know, we were dirty. You know, like one time there were ants in a sandwich and we didn't feel like driving back to the store. So I'm like, you know what? It's protein. And we just sat there and we ate the sandwich. They had a few little ants in it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But then I saw an RV for sale on the side of the road. We were in Sequim, Washington at that point. I saw this RV and I'm thinking, that looks pretty beat up. If that's like less than $4,000, I'm buying it. So I talked him down to 4,000. I called my mom. I was like, can I borrow a couple thousand dollars? And we bought the RV.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That really started your journey.
It did. I had been secretly sprinkling Mark's ashes, which I brought with me because I didn't want to leave him home alone in case something happened.
Okay. You know,
like the house burned down, like anything could have happened to him.
Right.
And it was kind of like I just wanted him with me. Okay. The box had spilled on the way to an outhouse one night at a campground, and it was like all over me. I brought him with me for protection because I was scared. Like, you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you're at a campground, So after that happened, I was like, oh, maybe he wanted out of his box. Like, this is kind of cool. I could sprinkle him in different places. Right. So we're secretly doing that, not telling the girls because I didn't want to upset them. And then after we call him Harvey the RV. After we bought Harvey, I was like, hey, you know what we could do? We could drive this thing home and we could sprinkle Dad wherever we feel like it. So that started us doing like 32,000 miles of ashes sprinkling, but we put more than 60 on the RV because we've just gone out traveling in it.
So you did this, the almost 32,000 miles of traveling and camping and seeing the U.S. with your two daughters, sprinkling Mark in all these great, neat little places along the way. How was that helpful in helping you grieve and I don't want to use the word move on, but to be able to put that grief someplace where you wouldn't let it destroy being happy and you know, you have two young girls who have a whole life ahead of them. Mm-hmm. How did that really, when did you see that starting to help heal?
You know, they were kind of like mini funerals, and that's what one of my daughters called it. And, you know, it just became fun. You know, we make jokes about it, and it just changed everything.
Okay.
And it was a great way. I mean, it wasn't like we were, you know, driving down dirt roads sobbing, like, where are we going to put Dad? I mean, he ended up getting thrown away in a McDonald's dumpster. Okay. The whole box got thrown away. And the McDonald's, we didn't even realize it till we got to Boise, Idaho, that Dad was gone. Yeah. So then I had to call McDonald's, and the manager actually went into the dumpster and got the ashes out. And then the head of the tribe there, it was on an Indian reservation, he did a ceremony for my husband, like a traditional Indian ceremony, and brought him up to these this forest with white pines in it, like incredible. So the people that you meet in the places that you go and all of that really is what I think helped us not be stuck in grief. Because at home, your friends are like, are you okay? You know, it's Monday. Your garbage cans aren't out, Laura. You know what I mean? Like, they worry about you. But when you have the freedom to not know anybody and not to have anybody worry about you, I think it was more healing.
I think you're right. You know, when you're around people and your friends, most do not know how to react, what to say.
Yeah.
People have preconceived notions of where you should be, in what stages of grief, what you should be doing. And yes, they're all trying to help, but sometimes you don't want that help. You just want to be left alone. And if you don't want to put your garbage cans out, you don't want to put your garbage cans out.
Right.
And you move, you become independent because you have to. So you mentioned about the people that you met along the way and the compassion that they showed. That must have opened up a whole new world, not just for you, but your children at such a young age.
Oh my gosh, like we went to this family's wedding on a goat farm in Cape Breton, Canada, you know, and they put us up like family. You know, Harvey, the RV broke down in New Mexico. at Red Tent, some hiking area. And he only broke down once, I have to say, but he needed a new radiator. And this couple, and I sat there, we waited for like 8 hours for a tow truck. That's a whole nother story. It never came. This couple saw us sweating to death in the guard shack with their young daughter. They were opera singers who were performing in Santa Fe. And they're like, come stay with us. Literally. We jumped in their car. And I mean, they trusted us and they had a 10-year-old daughter. So we figured they were fine. You know, just people were wonderful. Some Marines one time, I got a flat tire and these three Marines pulled over and they helped us. And I don't know, like at Walmart or Costco, the big box stores, which I never normally shop at, but when you're an RVer, you do. So I get cookies for the girls and like, I'd offer them to ladies in the lines. I'd be like, oh, do you want a cookie? And then we'd start talking. So like, I would connect with people.
Well, that's really what it's all about. And so often people are afraid to connect with other people. And I think it's wonderful that you allowed yourself to do this.
Well, you don't have people worrying about you either. So you know how like you sit next to a stranger on an airplane and, you know, they tell you their whole life story, you know, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I always say that I grieved in the arms of America, but but not necessarily on my family and friends, because, you know, that's a burden.
Yes.
To have a shell-shocked, you know, upset girlfriend whose husband just died, who's got two kids, like, that's a lot of stuff. And I don't like putting my stuff on people.
Well, I hear you. Your two girls, it took 5 years. Why did you, every time you went out, did you have a destination in mind?
No.
There you go. I love it.
No, and I have to tell you, I can't really read a map.
Oh, neither can I.
Yeah, there's something wrong with my brain. So we were just
my brain. I just can't read a map.
Well, there's some kind of, if you Google it, of course, if you Google anything, there's actually like an affliction or like something wired. There are people who can't read maps.
Okay.
We're not the only one, Sylvia. But we would kind of just go wherever we went.
So 5 years, why was that fifth year? Why did it end? Was there a goal point at that point?
No, there really wasn't. You know, I wanted to get him to his boyhood home in Kansas. There was like a creek behind their house, and he used to talk about he and his brothers would play with frogs back there and whip snowballs at each other and stuff, you know? So I wanted to get him back home, which I did, and to this beautiful sunflower field. You know, Kansas is the state flower, right? And we had been to a sunflower field once. So it just was it. It was just like a natural ending, you know? So then I wasn't going to write my book, even though I'm a journalist. Everyone's like, oh, you should write a book. Somebody got to write a book. I don't know how to write a book. I don't want to. but then after all of that, and after all of our experiences and the places we went and the people that we met and, you know, the mountains that we climbed and zip lining and horseback riding and whitewater rafting, which I'm terrified of, but I had to do it. walking over suspension bridges, like, you know, fishing, crabbing, just all this great stuff. And it was on a budget, I have to say.
Okay.
We were very good at budgeting. That's, you know. After all of that, I think we were just kind of done, you know? It's just a natural progression. So I got up in the sunflower field. Everyone wanted me to write a book. Then I got home and I was going through a filing cabinet that we had had for 15 years. Okay.
And what did you find there?
I never saw this folder. It's green. I have a picture of it on my blog. It says Mark's Writings. I'm like, what? And it, like, I'm not superstitious. I'm not religious. I'm not spiritual. I don't know if I believe in psychics, mediums. Like, I'm just basic. Just okay. A basic person. But I read these journals that he had written, and it was incredible that he had written about things that we had already done on the trips that he had done. Like places he'd been, he even wrote about his own death. Like through this character he called Isaac, who was a homesteader in Kansas in like 1860. And Mark wrote about, he was writing a story about this made up character. And exactly how that man died is exactly how my husband died. The man had a daughter named Ruth. He always wanted to name one of our daughters Ruth. No offense if anybody's name is Ruth, but it's not my favorite name. But
I won't tell my sister. I won't tell my sister.
Okay. I mean, yeah, everybody has a name that they like and that they don't, you know, or that they wouldn't want, that they might enjoy or appreciate the name, but maybe they don't want to name their child that. But I'm like, where did you get the name Ruth from? You just like all these little things. Like we had adopted, I don't know if you can see this dog. You can't see him. He's on the cover of my book. And in the driver's seat of the RV of the Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles. That's published by Penguin Random House, which was no small feat, and Hatherly. Anyway, so this dog right here was on an Indian reservation in Mesa, Arizona, which has like, I think it's 15 million acres. It's is huge, right? And there's one little like gas station in this area and a cultural center. So I wanted to go to the cultural center. So we drove like 7 hours out of our way, the girls and me. And I just was like so compelled to go there. And we get there, I'm like, are you kidding me? This is it. It was like just like a diner in a little building, which was closed. So this dog comes up to us and he clearly, you know, wants to get in the RV and, you know, have us take him home. And my kids are begging me, Mom, please, can we take the dog home? He was following us everywhere. We took the dog home.
Okay.
Mark had written about that dog in one of his journals on the Hopi Mesa. Okay.
A little freaky.
A little freaky. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I will write that book. So I did. I wrote the book. And like I said, Hatherly Press, and Penguin Random House published it. It was just in People magazine. I should say it was on people.com, which is, you know, their online magazine. And that's it.
So what do you hope people get out of the book?
I hope that people who are stuck in anything, like a job, maybe you're not as happy in a relationship, or, you know, you have a life-changing event, to try not to dwell on it and to do something completely out of character to build your character.
Okay.
So, like my girls, my little one, who's now 19, she's an EMT who was going to go to med school. And then she got a summer internship on the Tall Ships America. Never sailed a day in her life. She's been all over the United States. She's a deckhand, and she's given her 100-ton captain's license.
Fantastic.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
So, you know, go figure, right? Yeah. But I kind of think that maybe her experiences in being in the RV and, you know, I make the kids read the map. You know, they get a budget for how much they could spend on food that day and entertainment. If the tire blew after the Marines taught us how to do it, we'd have to get out, change the tire. They would pump the gas, do the oil. You know, they really learned a lot. Build the campfires, and it was fun. So I think that they have a more adventuresome spirit, you know, because they haven't been snowplowed. I'm the opposite of a snowplow parent. And the other one is, you know, she's doing great. She's a photography major at a big art college. And, you know, they're strong, independent, resilient, very level-headed, hilarious, beautiful girls.
And you went totally out of your comfort zone when you started this camping experience. Due to circumstances that were, you knew you needed to do something, and so you did something totally different than anything else you guys had done before, which I think is something, if we would step out of our comfort zone at times, we'd probably find things that we like to do that we thought, nah, we really don't. And it also opens up a total new world.
Well, it does with anything, right? Like a business challenge and anything challenge. You know, I'll take the challenge, because otherwise it's just inertia. And I don't want his death to define me as much as it, you know, is an emotionally difficult thing. You know, most people get the phone call, right? So, you know, that's tough. So I had to really shake it up. And it was great. I love America. Like, everyone goes off to Europe and everything, which is great too. But there are so many amazing things here in Canada. It's just like, why go anywhere else, in a sense? You know, I think you need to learn your geography and, you know, hit the points here.
So what are you up to now?
Hopefully a movie.
Okay.
A few offers, a few things coming in, which I think is great. I would love to see it, even though it's my story, but as a journalist, you know, strong female protagonist, love, death, intrigue. It's got
some of everything.
Yeah, it has some of everything.
And it shows a different way than what most people would do in dealing with grief.
Well, you know, it's funny
and
too.
Trauma.
Yeah. But RVing is so big now. RV sales are up 175% because of COVID. Like, everyone wants an RV. And I know my friends used to kind of think like it was tacky. Now I'm like, look at me now, huh? So I'm working on the movie thing, and I'm like 98% done with the second book.
Airbnb.
The Airbnb
Chronicles.
Which I started doing Airbnb to help support writing the Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles. And also, I'd had a job for 20 years as a magazine editor, and the magazine's circulation went way down because people barely buy magazines anymore. So I was kind of at a crossroads financially. I didn't have a job and I'm trying to write this book. So I started doing Airbnb out of my house. And I met some really crazy people, but also really nice people. So, you know, it's a story of a mother and what we face when we're about to become empty nested. And that was hard.
I'm sure.
Oh my gosh, to have your kids leave you? So, you know, I thought, well, this is a great way to fill the house with people and love and to make some money. And so now the book is Penguin Random House again, and Hatherly are publishing it, and it's with them right now. So I think it'll come out sometime in the spring of next year, like April, May, June, somewhere around there.
So where can people find information about you? Tell us your website.
Well, it's the Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles.
Okay.
And they could read the people.com story. Or they can go to the website, but my name is really hard to spell. No one would remember it. Farenthold. Like, who can, you can't even say it, right?
Me, I don't try saying anyone's name. That's why everyone introduces themselves.
Right, right.
Farenthold.
No one's going to remember Farenthold or pronounce it. So it's the Pink Steering Wheel Chronicles. It's on Amazon.
It's a love story. It's a story of a family dealing with a huge loss and trauma, and while dealing with it, doing something so unexpected and opening your eyes to so much more around and feeling the compassion from so many people around the country.
Yeah, so, I mean, just...
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I believe in road therapy. Like, I had a therapist and I love her, but I'm like, Amy, I can't come in here and sit on this couch every week. Like, this is, I love you, but this is not helping me.
Well, this was something that you could do with the girls.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
was something that instead of family therapy and on a couch, it was open air family therapy. And it's something that now people can not just read the book and feel what you felt and experience what you experienced, but also maybe think about doing it. So
exactly. Yes. And then now there are so many people on the road and so many people in their RVs, and it's great because, you know, America, there's so much to see and do here. And it just makes me really happy that people are, you know, rediscovering what we have.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
I am so glad we connected. Thank you so much. This has been very interesting and it's very uplifting.
Yeah, it's not a depressing book. And the first chapter is a little tough, but it's actually people, I mean, it's had like hundreds of reviews and people think it's funny. Because it kind of is. It's like a funny, little bit of a sarcastic look at death.
Yes.
In the face of society and what widows and widowers are supposed to do. And
exactly. See, that's the thing. What people assume, what their perception of what we should be doing, what you should be doing, whether it's the loss of a spouse, a divorce, a loss, right. You know, anything. Everyone has a perception of what they think should be taking place, how you should act, what you should do, how they should act, and you know, people have to realize that not everyone acts the same, not everyone reacts the same, not everyone has the same experience. So
it's what we bring to the table. I mean, there's no right way or wrong way. We have a family motto. My husband's last name was Pittman. Wait, what was it? There's a right way, there's a wrong way, and there's the Pittman way.
There you go.
So we the Pittman way. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so whatever people do to get through the night is all good.
Right. And no one should judge somebody based on their own preconceptions of what's supposed to be.
We're all getting better at it though, right? We're becoming a more lenient, accepting society, which is nice to see.
Well, let's hope that continues. Hang on.
Back to you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.